It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Adoption and foster care funding policies are going through changes in Wisconsin and nationwide.
Just before President Biden left office, he signed into law bipartisan legislation to support the safety and well-being of hundreds of thousands of children who are in the foster care system.
Later, we'll hear from foster parents in Wisconsin about how they view their mission in helping vulnerable children.
But first, we turn to Jeff Purtle, Secretary Designee for the State Department of Children and Families. Secretary Purtle, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks, Kate. I'm really appreciative to get to talk about some of this today. Very exciting stuff.
How has being a former foster parent in Wisconsin informed your work now with child welfare programs and family policy?
Yeah, we're the agency. We navigate child care, child support, child welfare, and then W-2 and some of the workforce supports, economic supports in the state. When my wife and I decided to start a family, we became licensed foster parents. We adopted our firstborn, and then we fostered a few other kids, and then later adopted our youngest son. Our oldest is adopted from Milwaukee at birth, and then our youngest was adopted in Madison. And the experience of being part of the foster care system, I think it's so impactful as we think about not only how it touches our lives, our kids' lives, the relationships we have with our kids' birth mothers, and they're different. To have seen that court process play out, to have gone through the licensing process and lived some of those experiences, when we're talking to the legislature about how these things work, it is always both a sort of professional and personal exercise for me in thinking about how not only it touched my life, but the other perspectives and ways that people interact with the system.
People might want to know, is it difficult to become a foster parent, to become a foster family?
You know, I would say it's a journey. Mm-hmm. It is a process that you go through when a child is placed in out-of-home care, and we can talk about kind of what that means in a second. But when we get to that point where a child or a siblings need to be removed, the first choice and first best placement is going to be sort of with the closest caring, stable adult in their lives. And typically, that's going to be a family member, maybe an aunt, uncle, a grandparent. And increasingly, it might be another adult who has a profound or significant relationship with the child. Maybe it's a mentor, maybe it's a friend's parent. Those folks can step in. And so there's a kinship process. And then there's the licensed foster parent process, which anybody can go through who is ready to welcome a child into their home, who is in need of a place of love, care, and support. You go through that licensing process. There's some training you have to do. There's, you know, background checks and disclosures and other pieces. And then you're in the midst of it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those placements are very short. They can be temporary, or sometimes they take a little bit longer. It is a process that folks go through. It is a certification that they have. We got to make sure kids are safe and secure, but it's a wonderful and life-changing experience, but it also can be very challenging.
What do you make of this larger trend we're seeing across the country where states are really prioritizing kin-first care to put the child with a relative? And are there financial supports for that with kin-first care? What do you see?
So there are financial supports both for foster parents and kin placements. Now we sort of say like kin placements. Together, they're sort of in the same lane, and that would be those other trusted caring adults kids have deep relationships with. Traditionally, there are higher financial supports for licensed foster families, but we've seen a movement, and we see it here in Wisconsin, both to increase funding for both foster parents and kin and like kin placements, and to create a more equal system in that universe. And I think particularly the like kin expansion is incredibly powerful. You've seen it both in community settings. It was a really big priority in tribal communities, who sometimes organize families in different ways. They think about kinship in a broader sense than sometimes the traditional state does. And, you know, what we would see sometimes is, again, maybe a neighbor or a best friend's parent who was willing to take placement of a child in a kin-like relationship, but maybe there was a distant aunt or uncle or relative in, you know, New York or California or Florida somewhere who, you know, technically would be higher on the list because they are a biological relative. Hmm. And for the child, I think centering their experience to be able to put them with the most trusted adult that they know is an important part of minimizing the trauma. Anytime a kid is placed in out-of-home care, is going through a transition where they're not going to be placed with their parent, it is traumatic. It is a trauma on top of all of the things that were already happening that led to that moment. The removal itself is also a traumatic moment. And being able to be placed with a known caring adult is a really important part of mitigating and managing and supporting that experience, and then supporting that child in that experience. And as a parent of two boys who are adopted, I got to be honest, I'm just like, feel deeply the idea that my relationship with them is deep and profound, and it's not biological, and it's just as valid as anybody else's. And so this idea of like kin for me is just a very powerful way of supporting kids. And I think it's been a very well-received and popular thing across the state.
Thank you for sharing that. Jeff Pirtle with us, Secretary Designee of the State Department of Children and Families, as we discuss fostering in Wisconsin. We saw President Biden sign the Supporting America's Children and Families Act into law in early January. Congresswoman Gwen Moore of Milwaukee co-chairing the Congressional Caucus on Foster Youth. A lot of bipartisan action there on that new law. What can Wisconsin families expect from this new law?
So the law paves the way and really mirrors some of the work being done at the state level around this idea of supporting a family before they actually reach out-of-home care. And so it really helps social workers and child welfare folks who are generally working at the county level to be able to use some financial supports on things like housing, transportation, the kinds of things that would stabilize a situation, particularly when I think about, again, that universe where, and I don't love this term, but this is sort of how it's referred to in statute, that idea of neglect. What can we do to stabilize a kid in a family scenario? It's usually around food access, cleanliness. Again, if a parent is struggling with addiction or mental health, you know, getting their medication stabilized, if they're in a crisis situation and we have an acute episode going on, but also in a, you know, if we're managing a more long-term experience, ensuring that those supports are in place. Again, maybe grandma's coming in to do dinner a couple nights a week, you know, making sure that sort of consistently those families have the supports they need to be able to thrive on their own. And this legislation really prevents kids from crossing that threshold into out-of-home care a lot of the time, which carries some trauma and adverse outcomes. Even in the best situation we can put them in foster care, it is still a difficult experience to go through. And so this broad, bipartisan, state and federal, just a general shift in the system has been a really positive one. We run a state program that unlocks very similar kinds of funding for county to use that's more flexible. And we just see really big dividends, both in terms of outcomes for kids. It also costs less. It's less expensive to do these in-home interventions and supports than it is to fund a foster care system or move into these more substantial placements that kids with higher needs would need. So I think it's a win on both fronts.
Do you find that these are the types of steps that might be lifting up families that are experiencing poverty?
I do. A lot of our interventions, though, are sort of short-term supports. A lot of the things that really can stabilize families, one of the most important is stabilizing housing. Come back to, if you have a caring, stable adult and you have a warm, safe place to live with food, everything else can kind of take care of itself most of the time, but like those two cornerstones are really, really important. And so stabilizing housing is a really important part of stabilizing family structures. And we've seen some really good research about the impacts of that. We saw this, you know, coming out of the pandemic when the eviction moratoriums were in place, we saw significantly fewer kids referred to child welfare, real dip in those numbers. And, you know, they've come back up a little bit after the pandemic, but I think that tells us something about how important housing is to thriving family success.
Here in the Trump administration, it has reversed course. It will not be freezing federal social service grants. But I wonder, as you watch the news take place, what is at stake for Wisconsin child welfare programs, and what are you watching for on the national, federal level?
You know, there are two pieces, I think, for folks to sort of keep their eye on. There's sort of the immediate actions that are being ordered, both from the White House by the president, and then kind of what that means in the federal agencies and sort of trickle down to us at the state level. And, you know, while they have rescinded this sort of freeze, they are still reviewing all of these federally funded programs. They've sent a lot of executive orders that honestly, no one's exactly sure what they mean. And with the significant personnel turnovers that are happening, there's a lot of radio silence from the federal agencies. So we're not getting a lot of guidance about, you know, what's supposed to happen. Hmm. Our priority, the governor's priority, is to continue to make sure that the essential benefits and programs and supports that families are entitled to, that have been approved by Congress, and that people are depending on, to make sure that that's there. It's profoundly important. That's our responsibility, and that's what we're going to do. That said, they're testing the limits of what that means and sort of what on the executive branch they can do to sort of unilaterally restrict funding or change funding programs that have been approved by Congress. You're going to see a lot of litigation on that. We're going to see it in the Supreme Court. We'll have to see what happens in the in that universe. But we also see the House Budget Committee, they're going to have to do a budget reconciliation process and laid out sort of some expected markers on kinds of cuts they're looking at, fund sources they're considering to eliminate or reduce. And a lot of those will trickle down to sort of essential benefits and programs. They're talking about making reductions in TANF funding. They're talking about changing work participation requirements. They're talking about changing a range of things. You know, we'll have to see what Congress ultimately decides to do. But I think in terms of many of the bread and butter things that people depend on and touch their lives, certainly there's a profound sense of concern about what the impact will be, and frankly, the progress that we've made in some of these areas.
Turning here, though, to Wisconsin soil, Wisconsin having this multi-billion dollar budget surplus, Governor Evers in a State of the State proclaiming it the year of the kid.
Yeah.
You are children and families.
That's us.
Yeah. So, you know, how is your agency going to help to deliver the governor's priorities and improving the wellness of Wisconsin young people? And what do you want lawmakers to be thinking about as they craft a new state budget?
Absolutely. You know, we sort of joke that every year is the year of the kid at the Department of Children and Families. But we're excited that all of government gets to sort of embrace that frame. And I think, you know, the governor likes the idea of the year of the kid as an organizing framework to think about all of the ways that kids and families need support. And yes, that involves school, but all the time outside of school that can make the next generation thrive and be successful. And for us, that is a lot about what does it mean to set young families in particular up for success. And I got to tell you, across the political spectrum, everybody agrees childcare is a problem. They might disagree a little bit on which solutions to pursue or which strategies to pursue, but it's just been a really big change in a generation. And we see a lot of grandparents, even grandparents who are caregivers part-time and helping families piece things together, are worried about making sure that their grandkids and parents are worried about their kids having a safe place to go, getting access to childcare and do those things. And so I think that's going to be really central in the conversation. One of the things we've really seen, in addition to serving more kids in their families, is also serving fewer kids in an, what we would call a congregate care or residential care setting. So a more institutional setting when they have higher needs, higher medical needs, significant socioemotional issues or mental health issues, in being able to serve them in a family-based setting. And sometimes we need dedicated folks to be able to do that and help those kids. But putting kids in a family setting always generates better outcomes for them. It can be less costly. And it's really just a whole shift in the system into the thing everybody knows in their heart that they care about, which is being in a family. Families are very powerful. The last thing I'll say, though, and I think you heard the governor speak about this in the year of the kid, is that it's also an organizing opportunity to think about how mental health and stresses on families are impacting kids. And, you know, he particularly went to talk about some of the challenges around suicide prevention. We see there's a Surgeon General's report, both around social media for kids and parents on pressure, that touch on the way social media is really driving some of these mental health issues and the intersection there, and why it's both can be a great thing, but also can be a really hard, challenging thing, particularly for young people to navigate. And, you know, I live on the east side of Madison. The Abundant Life shooting was a few blocks from my house. I saw the emergency vehicles brush past that morning. And, you know, it was not far from my kids' school. My kids go to different schools. They were worried that the, as they went into lockdown, that their sibling, you know, was in trouble. And it's profoundly impactful. And the governor's really spoken about common sense things that are broadly popular, that respect the rights of gun owners, but also reflect the modern mental health challenges and smart things that other states are doing, from red flag laws to voluntary surrenders that could help make our kids safer. And I think that's just tremendously important.
I want to switch gears as we close to shine a light on the families that your agency is celebrating, who are making a difference, you know, among adoptive families and foster families. And you put together these awards each year. And we'll be speaking to the Beniers, one of the recognized families. What sticks out to you about this foster family?
I mean, all foster families are doing phenomenal work and are a critical part of serving families. But the Beniers, you know, they really did something that is sometimes really hard for families, which is to take a larger sibling group. They brought three kids under the age of three, ultimately four, into their home so that those siblings could stay together as a family. They sustained a meaningful and really powerful relationship with those kids' birth mom, even as, you know, she went on to have other children, and they've made that part of the larger family that they serve together. Their birth mom ultimately decided to entrust the care of her kids and the parenting of her kids to the Beniers for the rest of their lives voluntarily. And they have shown how you can thrive in this space to open up your home and really provide that, again, that stable, caring permanence. And most importantly, keeping those sibling groups. It is hard. I mean, we took in two kids at one point, and two siblings was a big shift in the number of kids we were parenting. And that was really hard. Three and four is a big change, and they continue to keep their home open for temporary placements for foster kids and build relationships. And it's just, it's really powerful work, and it's really centered on, I think, their just great engagement with their birth mom and with that idea of keeping siblings intact. When we talk to kids who are older, there's a group called Camp Tubalong that does sibling reunification. They run a camp in the summer where kids who are siblings who are placed in foster care, who are separated, can come back together and see their siblings. And it's a really powerful experience. But we hear from them how hard it is to be separated from your brothers and sisters if you're in out-of-home care. And the Beniers made it possible to not have to do that. And I just think that is the best thing in the world.
Jeff, thank you so much for this conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate, and thanks for shining a spotlight on it.
Jeff Purtle is Secretary Designee of the State Department of Children and Families. He is a former licensed foster parent and now has two adopted children. We've been taking a closer look at state and national policies that impact the foster care system.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, meet a Milwaukee couple honored by the governor for their contributions as a foster family.
We haven't had any experience that has made us say, we're done. We're ready to quit. It has all been worth it.
Once you see the need, you got to step up.
The Beniers share their journey with foster youth. That's next on WPR News.